This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us today, Circuit Court Judge Rom Trader. He's had 20 years of experience as a prosecutor before becoming a First Circuit Court judge. Judge Trader is the chair of the Criminal Pretrial Task Force, which is preparing a report for the state lawmakers for the upcoming session. It's to help them decide what changes have needed to be made to our current system. The report is to cover criminal pretrial practices to see if there's room to release pretrial offenders who are low flight risks and who may not be a threat to public safety. Josh Wish is executive director of ACLU of Hawaii, which earlier this year released a report on bail reform. The ACLU is also hosting a panel on this issue later this month. And prior to the ACLU, Josh was with the State Attorney General's Office and deputy director of the State Tax Department. And Mitch Roth is a Hawaii County prosecuting attorney who for decades has served that community there. He is on the front line. He joins us online from Hilo. Welcome to you all.
Thanks. Aloha.
Good morning.
Now, Judge, can we start with you? What's the status of your review?
Well, our task force has completed a long and very, I think, fruitful year of taking a hard look at our current pretrial system. Trying to identify things that possibly aren't quite as they should be. Also to try to look at ways that we can improve the system to make it both fairer as well as safer. And we've completed our work. We've drafted a report which is due to the legislature in December prior to the next session. We're right now in a review and comment period on that report. There's probably close to 30 members of our task force. And so once all of that is complete and then we finalize a report, we're looking forward to passing that along to the legislature and hopefully adding a voice and some information to the discussion that's going to center around pretrial justice reforms in this upcoming session.
Do you know how long it had been before we actually had a review like this?
To my mind, I don't believe there's been this type of review. I mean, this, however, represents sort of the latest in a continuing interest in these issues. And for example, back in 2010, I believe OHA came out with their report looking at the impact of the criminal justice system on Native Hawaiians. And a year or two after that, the JRI, which was the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, came out with ways to try to be more data-driven and objective in some of the types of strategies that we could use to make improvements in the system. Out of that came some very helpful initiatives, including current pretrial risk assessment process. There's been a number of criminal law forums, both at the university as well as with the Bar Association. ACLU was a big part of the most recent groups that were taking a look and trying to drive this sort of need to take a look at the system. But our task force really is but the latest. But in my 30-some-odd years involved in criminal justice issues, this really is represents for me probably the biggest and most important effort that touches upon very, very pretty much every aspect of the system.
And Mitch, what's your take on the state of things? I mean, I've seen in some of your testimony that you submitted to the legislature that you're saying that really Hawaii has kind of pretty low numbers when it comes to pretrial detainees.
Yeah, looking at a report that shows that Hawaii actually has the second lowest pretrial detention rate behind Maine. Maine has the first, we have the second lowest in the country. That being said, you know, I sat on the task force. There was things that we believe that could change to even bring that rate down lower. But you know, we don't go as far as the ACLU has gone with their assessment. You know, one of the things we realize, and I think that needs to be realized, is that there's certain people that if you put them in jail, they'll recidivate more, and that means they're going to commit more crimes. But there's also a group of people that if you don't put them in jail, they're going to recidivate more. The key question is to really determine who are the right people that you're going to be holding, and who are the wrong people. You know, we have an assessment tool. My belief is that we can have better assessment tools to help us get those answers for not only pretrial detention, but for post-trial, you know, whether we're going to be, or after conviction, whether we're going to be asking for incarceration or we're going to be asking for some other consequence to the crimes.
And how are the facilities there on the Big Island?
They're like the rest of the state. We have too many people in our facilities for what they're built for. I don't think we've increased the size in maybe over 20, 30 years. So our population has increased, but our size or the amount of people we can hold has not increased. And so that is something I know that they're looking at on Oahu. I know that they're starting to look at stuff on the Big Island. And I think it's something that's far out due.
And what about the resources just for the judiciary? I mean, are we kind of putting enough money on that end so that people aren't sitting around waiting for their hearings?
I believe that we could also be doing a better job in that area. You know, one of the things that happens, and I'm sure Josh and Judge Schrader will tell you, is that we get a lot of people who are waiting to go to trial. A lot of cases get continued. Part of that is because of a lack of judicial resources. We're about to have a new courthouse in Kona, which is also long overdue. But we could definitely use more judges and more judicial resources on this island.
And Josh, you are on board here with your group, and you just recently came out with a report earlier this year. Mm-hmm. What's your take on where things are at?
So a couple of things. Yes, we came out with a preliminary report on bail reform in January of this year that was based on Hawaii-specific data, a review of 6 months' worth of it. We're going to be coming out with a final report, actually, in just the next month or so, and that's going to be based on a full year's worth of data. And a few things that we're looking at as a result of that. First, we have thousands of people sitting in jail right here in Hawaii on any given day who are quite literally innocent in the eyes of the law. It's somewhere around 1,000 or more people sitting in jail on any given day who have not yet been convicted of the crime they've been accused of committing. So that's the first thing. Second of all, this doesn't really do anything to help public safety because right now with the money bail system, and money is used as bail in about 90% of the cases in Hawaii with that system, if you are wealthy enough, then you can get out of jail anyway while you're awaiting trial. And what happens is if you don't have those resources, even if you've been accused of committing the same crime as someone who is wealthy, then you sit in jail while you're waiting for trial. Third, there are a number of legal and constitutional issues that this poses. The Supreme Court of the United States has said that people sitting in jail while waiting for trial is supposed to be the very careful exception, not the norm. And yet, what we've really seen here in Hawaii and across the country is that, to a large extent, that is becoming the norm. Like I mentioned, in Hawaii jails, about half of that population, almost half of the population, are pretrial detainees. So it's hard to say at this point that that's the exception. Then the last thing, and you'd mentioned a question about resources, Catherine. Right now, just from a practical perspective, it costs about $145 per day per person to keep someone in Hawaii jails. So when you're looking at a little bit over 1,000 people on any given day who are sitting there at that that expense, the taxpayers of Hawaii are paying about $60 million a year to keep people in jail who are innocent in the eyes of the law. So look, just kind of to summarize it, the ACLU is not interested in just letting convicted criminals walk free. That's not what we're here for. What we're talking about right now is that under our current bail system, if two people are accused of the same crime, then for the most part, the person who is wealthy gets out and gets to prepare for trial, and the person who is not wealthy sits in jail while they're waiting for their day in court.
And I know there's been concern about our system and concern about the threat of federal takeover, because we've had a number of our departments under federal oversight for some time until we've, you know, cleaned up our act and work on improving these areas. But what about then the use of, let's say, the federal detention center, you know, which may have space because of the overcrowding situation here on Oahu?
Well, I think to step back, when you're taking a look at the overcrowding, and we agree with the concerns about oversight being necessary. Actually, in January of 2017, the ACLU wrote to the Department of Justice and asked them to take a look into our current state of the corrections facilities here, because almost without exception, they're all overcrowded. But the key here is to consider that one of the reasons they're overcrowded is because there are people sitting in them who, in the eyes of the law, are innocent. So if you take those people out, then that will go a long way towards helping with the overcrowding. That'll go a long way towards helping with the constitutional violations that are implicated by the overcrowding. And I think it really is important for everybody out there listening to keep in mind that when we're talking about bail, if I can back up for just one last second, I think a lot of people are under the misimpression that bail is supposed to be punishment. But that's really not the case at all. And I think even Mitch and Judge Trader would agree with me on this, which is that the purpose of bail is to make sure that someone returns to court. And it's to make sure that public safety is protected and that the due process rights of the accused are protected. And there are ways to do that other than just money. And other jurisdictions have successfully used some of those alternatives, and they found that actually rates of return to court have gone up, and it costs a heck of a lot less for their state's taxpayers.
So, Captain, this is Mitch. If I can just jump in again, you know, my friend Josh, and we are good friends, makes this point.
Yes, we are.
About people being innocent in the eyes of the law. What he's not saying is that these people haven't broke the law. They're just, in the eyes of the law because you're innocent until proven guilty. The fact of the matter is, people aren't sitting in jail because they can't afford to bail out. Because they don't have.
Mitch, you know what? You're fading in and out. Could you speak a little bit closer?
Sure.
Thanks.
People are in jail because they've broken the law, generally. The other thing is, you asked the question about using the federal detention facility, and the state does use the federal detention facility. So we are making use of that, but you know, I think one of the big problems is we don't have the amount of jail space. We don't have the judicial enough judges, enough courtrooms to hear these cases. And the other part that we really need to do a better job is on the assessment on who really needs to be sitting there pending trial and after conviction versus the way we make decisions at the current time.
What's your sense? Do you think that if this is the year where we actually do something, that 2019 might be the time? I mean, we've seen a number of states across the country change their systems. I think in New Jersey, they've completely dropped it. Judge Trader, what do you think about happening?
I think this upcoming session is going to be one of those landmark type sessions, because clearly, if based upon some of the bills that were introduced last session, there's tremendous interest. And this has been a set of issues that has been looked at for many years on the mainland in other jurisdictions. And here in Hawaii, you know, we've, for good reason, need to be concerned about the quality of pretrial justice here. And so how are we going to make this system both fairer to the individual but also safe? That's where the sort of difficulties come in. And that's not an easy thing to do. Crime is a reality. Police will arrest, prosecutors will charge, courts will adjudicate. And these defendants, while they are, as Mitch indicated, are they're accused of committing a crime, they are presumed innocent. And in our society, in our system of justice, the individual's rights are absolutely paramount. Presumption of innocence, burden of proof. But also in that calculus is public safety. There are people that are so incredibly dangerous, or people that who will not appear in court, that need to be detained, and they should be detained pending an outcome. But for many offenders, decisions need to be made that are made by judges with the benefit of objective risk assessment information that targets the risks that these offenders present in terms of, will they appear in court? If they are released, are they likely to commit another crime? And if they are released, what is their risk of violence that they pose? For those offenders that pose a very low risk and can be safely released, those are the individuals that really do not need to be detained. And they can easily be detained and managed on appropriate minimal conditions until their case is resolved. But here, right now, in Hawaii, we have a system that does rely on money bail. And there's a poor correlation, I think the research shows, between setting an amount of bail with the risk that an offender presents. And so the work of our task force, as well as like other places across the country, is trying to figure out how we can make adjustments to allow us to make better, more objective decisions based upon data, based upon evidence-based practices. And if we do that, then we are going to detain those individuals that are appropriately detained. And we are going to hopefully release individuals that can be safely released. And when I say safely, meaning that they will appear, they won't commit other crimes, they're not going to pose a danger to anybody. If we do those things, then that will represent a marked improvement in terms of where we are currently at.
And Mitch, I do want to talk about a particular high-profile case that I know your community is dealing with. But before we get to that, I do want to take a station break. If you are just joining in the conversation, we're talking about bail reform. Some call it a get-out-of-jail card in a nod to the popular board game Monopoly. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from UHM Kennedy Theater, presenting the stage production Dr. Seuss's The Cat in the Hat this Friday through Sunday. manoa.hawaii.edu/live-on-stage.
Hi, I'm Don Gagne. The 2018 midterm elections will be one of this year's biggest stories as voters head to the polls, and we'll be reporting as the results come in. While you'll be counting on all of us here to provide you with the answers and analysis you need, we'll be counting on you to support that work. So help us help you.
Whether you're a news junkie or a culture maven, HPR has what you need. Please give early to our fund drive, and thanks.
Support for The Conversation comes from Haleakala Waldorf School on Maui and Honolulu Waldorf School on Oahu, serving Hawaii's families from infancy with parent-child programs through high school, now accepting applications at both schools.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about bail reform. Is our justice system unfair to those who can't afford to pay? You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. And Josh, you wanted to make a point?
Yeah, actually, just following up on some of the good points that Judge Trader made in terms of, and a little bit on something Mitch had said about trying to make sure that the right people are being let free, for instance. Well, the challenge is that right now, according to the research that we've done, that we've seen in our report based on Hawaii-specific data, right now that's just not happening. Because the way bail setting works is that most of the counties have some form of bail guidelines, bail schedules, which basically says for this type of crime, bail should be set at this amount or in this range. And also, according to our studies, that amount is typically followed something like 80 to 90% of the time by most of the judges. And one of the reasons that that's a challenge is using Oahu as an example, because this is where most of the prisoners are located. For a Class C felony, that's the lowest level felony there is, the median bail amount set, according to our research, was about $11,000. And so it's hard at that point to say that there's no one in jail because they can't afford to get out. Because if you have that bail set at $11,000, you basically have three choices. One, you can actually pay $11,000 to the court, and then you can get out, and when you're done with trial, whatever happens, you get the money back. Two, you can try to find a bond agent, and you have to pay 10 to 15% of that amount, so call it about $1,100. Now here's the catch, you never get that back. Even if the charges are dismissed, the next day, you forfeit that money, you never get it back. Or third is you just sit in jail. And those are really the options that you're faced with. And there have been multiple studies over the last year or so that have shown that the average American family can only afford an unanticipated expense of about $500 without taking out a loan. So $11,000 is well out of reach for most people. I'm sure Mitch is listening, and it's true that the amounts are certainly less on the neighbor islands, including on Hawaii Island, where Mitch is prosecutor. But there's still a couple thousand dollars, which is still a lot of money for most people to be able to afford. And the other reason I bring that up is in terms of making sure that you do have the right people who are being addressed the right way. The other problem with these bail schedules is it means that things aren't being individualized for each person. What really should be happening is someone goes in front of a judge as quickly as possible after being arrested, and you take a look at everything involved with that person. Does that person have strong ties to the community? Do they have any kind of a violent history? Is there any reason to assume that they are a danger to the community? Is there any reason to assume that they are a flight risk? And if bail is set, do they have any ability to pay that? Because under the law, you're not supposed to set bail just as a way of keeping someone in jail. It's just supposed to get you to return to court. And right now, that kind of system really isn't working here the way it's supposed to be.
And we had a situation on the Big Island, Mitch, if you can address it, where somebody who was extradited was brought back to Hilo, made bail, and then I think in the process was linked to a case where a police officer died. Can you talk about that?
So let me just go back to something Josh has said. You know, he's using the Oahu numbers, and he correctly said the numbers are much different when you get out to the neighbor islands. It's a lot less. And as far as getting a bail hearing, in Hawaii County, you're going to get a bail hearing pretty much the first day you arrive in front of the court. So that's from day one, you're going to argue, the defense is going to argue bail. And a lot of times, the judge, we have an assessment tool. They're using it right away. And a lot of times, the judge will let people out. In this case, we had a person who came in looking like a nonviolent offender, but you know, his bail was $7,000. He had several felony charges against him, I think, including a gun charge. We had to extradite him back from the mainland. We felt that the bail at $7,000 was too low. We asked for higher bail. The court denied us a bail. Asked us to put in a bail motion. We did that. We went back again. We were denied again. This person gets out and kills a police officer, and not just a police officer, one of the nicest, best human beings that you'd ever meet. And then he shot and injured a second police officer. You know, that's kind of crazy to put things out there that, you know, this guy is not dangerous. Well, he was dangerous. He ended up killing someone. We felt, you know, he was a person that had a firearm offense. Well, that's not a violent offense. If you have a firearm offense and you've been convicted before, that makes you a little bit more dangerous, we believe. Unfortunately, the test that we use, the ORAS-PAT, which is the Ohio Risk Assessment Tool, doesn't really look at dangerousness. It looks at, are you coming back to court again, and bases pretty much everything on that. So I believe that we can do a better job with our assessment tools. And even the states, I think the one state that you guys mentioned was New Jersey. New Jersey's rate of incarceration, pretrial incarceration, is over twice the amount of the state of Hawaii rate. So they're locking up more people pretrial than we are. If you look at the problems in Hawaii, is there pretrial incarceration? Yes. Is it as bad as other places in the nation? Absolutely not. We're one of the lowest pretrial incarceration states per capita.
On this issue of assessment, we do have a caller on the line, Kathy from Hilo. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
So what would you like to make? What's the point you'd like to make?
Well, Mitch is familiar with me. I recently retired from HCCC after 42 years with the Department of Public Safety, both here and on the mainland. And the problem that I saw here was the lack of placement for people who are awaiting mental health assessments and pretrialers who are sitting in jail oftentimes two and three times longer than the mandatory or sentence that they would have received if they were found guilty before they can ever get an evaluation. The evaluators, the assessors, have to be flown in from Honolulu, and it takes months for these people to be evaluated, and they sit in the jail and take up space. And the problem, second problem that we run into with them is that they tend to be those that are preyed upon most by the jail population. So it sets up a whole different set of issues.
And you had experience with another mainland jail in this regard?
Yes, I was warden on the mainland in Idaho prior to coming to Hawaii. And I've dealt with a lot of these issues, but the problem here seems to be the drying up of mental health services, especially on the Big Island.
Mitch, do you want to address that?
That is such a valid point. That, you know, we see longer waits pretrial, but a lot of the people that are having these longer waits have mental health issues. And, you know, not just at the lower level end, but at the higher end. We have murder cases where people are waiting for, you know, the state to do their three-panel assessments. And those take forever over here. Out in the community, we used to have mental health services seeing these people regularly, on a weekly basis, they would see them. Now they may see them once a month, and because you're having that, you're having these other crimes that are affecting the quality of life and the safety of our community. It really isn't so much a pretrial issue, but it is a pretrial issue because it takes up space that we drastically need, and you know we need to get these people. I think a lot of these people need to be out of the jail and into treatment, but if there's no place to treat them, where do they end up? They end up in our jails.
So, Mitch, is it just not a case of enough staffers to do these evaluations?
I think that's a big part of it. There's not enough staff once they're in the jail. When you see that you have a person that needs mental health services and there's no services or there's a lack of services out there, that's a huge problem. For the people who are out on the street, when you have a police officer, we just have this talk not too long ago, we have police officers that will bring a person up to the hospital for a mental health assessment, and the hospital doesn't have the resources there, and they're not going to send them over to Oahu. So the officers get frustrated. What do you do with this person? This person is a danger to themselves. They are a danger to the others. They may be out in a place, and they may be yelling and having a mental health episode. If there's nowhere other than a hospital than a jail to bring them, what do you do?
Judge?
Yes, if I could just kind of jump in here. Clearly there's a resource issue, and that has tremendous impact on what happens and what doesn't happen and how long people may sit in jail pretrial to some extent. But really, beyond that, one of the most critical resource issues that we have is information. And what I mean by that is it's easy to criticize a judge's decision when you don't necessarily know what information the judge had or didn't have. And on pretrial issues such as bail, detention and release decisions, getting that information that's relevant, that's timely, so that a prompt hearing can be had on these will allow us to do a better job of trying to identify those individuals based upon evidence-based practices, based upon what the research says, based upon a risk assessment tool that's been validated such that the measured risk corresponds to what risks they actually present if released, then hopefully more individuals can be safely released, because I completely agree with what Josh just mentioned before, that it needs to be an individualized determination. And in a money bail system, part of the information that's absolutely necessary is beyond the are they going to appear in court, the risk of recidivism, and certainly risk of violence is a huge one. But what bail amount, if money bail is set, is reasonable that they can afford? And there has been some discrepancies statewide. Certainly Oahu was pointed out by Josh and Mitch a short while ago. But when you get right down to it, making sure that judges have the most appropriate information will allow them to make better and more prompt and hopefully more effective decisions about who is sitting in and who is released from our jails.
I imagine that judges have had to take the heat for some of the decisions and don't really get a chance to explain their decisions.
But that's what we sign up for, and we are very mindful. You know, Hawaii judges try to do the very best every day in sometimes very difficult situations with heavy calendars, with less than complete information. Mm-hmm. But as I sort of started out my comment with, information is one of the most critical resources that we have. If we can put the right information into the hands of whoever he or she is as the judge making those decisions, then the correct people that pose a higher risk will remain locked up where they should be pretrial. But those people that are appropriate for release and will not jeopardize the safety of the community, that will return to court, that won't commit other crimes, those people should be released. And then where that has a really big impact is the size of the pretrial facility, because it would be very helpful to have a facility where the population is the needs or capacity of that size facility has been reduced by reforms that are effective and safe. And right now we're struggling because we're going through this whole process about a new facility for Oahu, and it's a discussion that needs to take place.
If you're just joining us, our guests in the studio are Judge Rahm Trader, we have Josh Wish, the Executive Director of the ACLU of Hawaii, and Mitch Roth, Hawaii County Prosecuting Attorney, joins us online. We do have a call, I believe, from Maui. Paige, are you still there? You wanted to make a point about police?
Well, actually, the tendency of the police on Maui is to overcharge. You might be arrested for a single charge, but when you get to the station, there's similar laws that affect the same act that you're being arrested for. So you might get three or four charges, which accumulates in the amount of bail needed to get out. So not only does that make it, prohibitive for the less off people to get out, but it also means in the end run that they sit in jail for the pretrial period, which is usually 4 or 5 months. And by that time, if they had no contact with the outside, the guards, first thing they take from you is your address or your phone. So you have no contact with the outside world, and should you be found innocent, you end up out on the street with no job, no money, no possessions, you're homeless. And that's one of the major reasons for addressing this problem and making it, I like the idea of the separate facilities for pretrial inmates. Even at MCCC, you get green for pretrial and orange for convicted. That's the only difference.
Thank you for calling, Paige. As far as facilities on Maui, Josh, can you address that? You did your study looking at all the islands. So what was the situation on Maui?
From the complaint that we sent to the Department of Justice as we were taking a look at the overcrowding situation in each facility, according to the numbers we had at that time, it was about 200% overcrowded.
Wow.
On the Maui Community Correctional Center. So the caller certainly is correct to be concerned about that. And if I can mention just one thing, following up on the judge's points about information, there's also been talk about risk assessment tools that are used to determine whether someone is a risk of not appearing at court or at a risk of rearrest. And one of the concerns that we have, that the ACLU has, is that the tool that's being used right now in Hawaii fails on a few levels. One of them is that what happens is you get just a percentage chance of whether you're a high, medium, or low risk. And according to the tool, a high risk of failure to appear is 15%. That's 15%, which is still a little bit weird to me how an 85% chance of being likely to reappear is considered high risk. And the other problem is that I believe the judges and the prosecutors don't actually see the information that goes into this tool. All they see is this person a high risk to reappear, and that's all they have to go on. And then one last point on this, one of the other problems we have with the tool is some of the biases that are built into the tool. It takes a look at a few different elements, and one of the first questions it asks is, what is the person's age at first arrest? Now, we know from studies here in Hawaii and across the country that ends up being a very close proxy for race. Because we know that people of color are vastly overrepresented in the criminal justice system. According to the OHA study that Judge Trader had referenced earlier, we know that Native Hawaiians here in Hawaii are especially overrepresented in the criminal justice system. And a lot of the time it means those communities are over-policed, which means you are more likely to be younger at an age of first arrest if you're a person of color, which means this tool is built in that you are more likely to be considered high risk just because of what you look like.
So it's built in bias.
It's built in bias. Okay.
We have a call from Waianae Lopaka. You had a point to make?
Yes, hi. My name is Lopaka. I'm from Waianae Uka. And I had some issues with the courts and run-ins and some basic traffic violations. I guess some of those traffic violations are considered criminal. And I noticed some inconsistencies, or I should say institutional inequity, with regard to the judicial system. For instance, in the, some of the arraignments that I had, I consistently brought up the issue of the nature and cause of the actions taken against me. And it seemed to appear that a lot of the judges never actually forced the prosecutors to answer the question. And so to the extent that, you know, the judge was talking about or someone was mentioning individual rights and information, I think that's critical and pivotal for the defendants who are, you know, accused and presumed innocent to be provided that information with regard to the nature and cause. Because as a Hawaiian, and I don't want to say Native Hawaiian because it's politically charged with federal entitlement, as a Hawaiian, you know, that identity is specific. And so with regards to, you know, criminal cases in the state of Hawaii court, it's important to understand what the jurisdiction of the proceedings is, because there's different rules of procedures. And depending on, you know, the system of law being used, a defendant would need to know those things. So I kind of wanted to wonder both the judge's opinion and the other individual's opinion with regard to these institutional inequities, you know, here in Hawaii, given the historical international legal or illegal act that occurred. It seems to me that disparate treatment of Native Hawaiians is one of those institutional inequities or an indicator of those institutional inequities with regards to the system here. So just wanted to get your opinions and thoughts on that.
Mitch, do you want to jump in there?
So there's a couple of things I can say. One, there's an overrepresentation of Hawaiians in our criminal justice system. I'm going to go off a line for a little bit here and say that, yes, there is, but there's also a disproportionate amount of Hawaiians in our drug treatment, CPS treatment. And I always ask this question, how is that when, you know, 150 years ago we had one of the most educated races? I mean, the Hawaiian people were more literate than anyone. They had one of the most sophisticated constitutions. And so there was a lot of things that had happened. I don't think, for example, it's a purposeful thing, oh, this person's Hawaiian, we're going to treat them differently, like it may be in the South with a white or a black. You have Hawaiian prosecutors, you have Hawaiian judges, and I think when you look at the statistics that they have, those pretty much would be on the same lines of how things happen. I think it goes to, I had this conversation with Josh a couple of months back when we were together about being poor. Poverty has certain things, places where you grow up, there's different challenges that you go through, and I think that's why you have disproportionate numbers, not that it's an intentional treating people differently because of the skin color or their religion or their sex or anything like that. And I think it's something that, I mean, there's a whole bunch of thoughts that come into my head about how we're trying to remedy that by doing things like the charter schools and the schools where, you know, speaking Hawaiian language and bringing back Hawaiian language and bringing back the pride of the culture of Hawaiiana, the pride of, you know, Hawaiians were intellectuals. In Hilo, we have a building called Imiloa. Imiloa is a seeker of knowledge, and that's what some of the cultural values of Hawaiians were versus a lot of the kids. When we see them, they don't know about the intellectual culture. They know about the warrior image. And I think the more we can do to help instill the historical culture of the Hawaiian as the intellectual, the scholar, I think those things will change.
So building up instead of tearing down, I guess.
Absolutely.
And Josh, you wanted to add something there?
Which is that when you're talking about the kind of inequities that the caller had discussed, I think Mitch is right that I don't think that there's a lot of overt racism that's necessarily happening amongst prosecutors or police, or certainly, you know, not judges. I'm sure there are a few bad apples, as there are in every profession. But for the most part, what this is representing, and that part of the assessment tool I mentioned that has the age at first arrest, is implicit bias, not explicit bias. And it shows up in, for instance, there was a study that was done at the University of Hawaii a few years ago that notes that Native Hawaiians were arrested for marijuana possession 6 times more often than their share of the population. And yet we also know from studies that Caucasians and Native Hawaiians and everybody else use marijuana in roughly the same quantities. And I take Mitch's point that there are also certainly people of color on the mainland and here in Hawaii who are prosecutors and who are judges. But there's actually a report that was done by was in a Harvard Law Review, I believe it was reviewing a book, that was noting, as surprising as this sounds, that implicit bias also exists amongst people of color against people of color. And so just because, unfortunately, there are people who represent all types of ethnicities across the spectrum, including in judges and prosecutors and police, that doesn't mean that suddenly the implicit bias goes away. And that's one of the reasons also that we have problems with this kind of risk assessment tool, because it's built into the algorithm. It's just baked into the cake right now that when you do this kind of risk assessment tool, it's going to end up having bias in it. That is despite the good intentions of people like Mitch. He'd mentioned we're friends. We are. He's an incredibly big-hearted person. But it's these kinds of things that are built into this system that are working against us.
May I comment just briefly? When people appear in court, they're courts of law. We're bound by rules and what legal precedent there is. But in terms of what, when people leave the courthouse, regardless of what decisions were made, the biggest factor that they gauge their satisfaction on is whether or not they had a meaningful opportunity. And their interaction with the court staff, and in particular the judge, whoever he or she is, has so much to do with that. And in, as it translates to the issue of bail reform, providing offenders a meaningful opportunity to address bail early so that they had a fair opportunity to either be, have a decision made by a judge to be released or not, that's the important thing. Not every decision is going to go their way. But just to comment on what the caller mentioned, certainly it's understandable that people have some frustration. Coming to the courthouse isn't a fun thing for most people, and a lot of things have gone wrong for people to be standing in front of a judge. But we want to make sure that that experience is as transparent as we can make it, and the decisions are objective, they're fair, and that people have a meaningful opportunity to participate. If we do those things, then everyone is better served.
Right. Everybody deserves a fair shake.
Exactly.
And I think it's certainly one thing that all of us on the call can agree on today. I mean, all of us want a justice system that works for everyone. All of us want a justice system that is keeping the public safe and protecting people's constitutional rights. And one of the reasons that the ACLU has been raising these concerns is when there are some failures in that area, when something falls down, there are serious implications against the person it affects. So if you have someone who has been arrested, and maybe they've done something wrong, maybe they haven't, they have to get convicted before that determination is made, it doesn't take long before they start losing the entire support structure in their life. Research has shown that within 72 hours of being incarcerated, just sitting pretrial, people start to lose their homes. They start to lose their jobs. There's no law that says that your job has to keep your job for you if you're sitting in jail awaiting trial. And they start to lose custody of their children. And what kind of things do we look at to bind a community together? It's people who can live together in a community, people who are contributing to the economic health of their community, and people who are involved in the lives of their children. And those are the three things you start losing within 72 hours if you've been arrested.
I think we've heard some of that from that call from Maui, the caller from Maui. We do have another call from Hilo. Thomas, are you there?
Yes.
And the point you want to make?
I wanted to make, they should be reclassified. The police should be called the judge, because the police, they make the judgment call. And then the judge should be called the enforcer, because he's the one that enforces the law. He enforces the thing, and the prosecutors, they just back up the police. And so the police are actually judges, because they're making the call. And another thing with the process, with the judicial system, is the police and the prosecutor's office has every means to help a criminal, but they have nothing in their toolbox to help victims of crimes. They're left with the sorry. The pathetic word sorry that happened to you, but they have everything for the criminal and nothing for the victim.
Thank you, Thomas, for that point. Anything you want to add on that position he takes, that we don't do enough for
one
the victim?
One of the things that we didn't talk about, we look at as prosecutors, before we even charge a case, we have an ethical burden to make sure that we're not going to charge something we don't believe we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And I recognize the caller, and I know that there's sometimes we have to tell people that I'm sorry, we just don't have enough evidence to bring cases forward, and that could be because of the quality and kind of evidence that we have. There's different rules. If the police obtain the evidence and violate our Constitution, we know that that's not going to come in. But we do actually look out for our victims, and sometimes we feel like we're a lone voice in the wilderness, arguing for the safety of our victims. And when it comes to bail, I think that's one of the things that we're always trying to look at is how do we keep our community safe? And that is one of the things that we look at when we're looking at bail.
We're just about out of time. Anything else you folks want to add briefly?
I would just simply say that this is a complex set of issues, and it requires input from everybody. And so this upcoming session, I'd encourage everyone to lend a voice to this because it's not going to get solved overnight. And we need to look at things at every part of the system, whether it's diverting people out of the system, citing them in lieu of arrest, getting them prompt bail hearings, making sure those determinations are made upon good information, and then figuring out what alternatives there are if someone has to be detained. But this has been well worth the effort for all concerned, and it's only by bringing a diverse perspective that, mm-hmm. that hopefully we can have a very informed legislative process.
We would like to thank our guests, Judge Rahm Trader, Mitch Roth, the Hoy County Prosecuting Attorney, and Josh Wish, the Executive Director of ACLU. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.